is America with Rich Valdez, powered by PolitiWeek.com.
And Rich Valdez is with us, former Christie administration official.
You worked for Chris Christie, you've been in politics, done a lot of public service stuff.
Rich Valdez, columnist now with the Washington Times.
This is America.
Richie V, you're on the air with the nation.
The nation.
This is America with your host, Rich Valdez.
What's up, America? I am Rich Valdez, El Conservador, Mr. Call Screener, Richie V, your liberty-loving Latino amigo right here 17 blocks away from Madison Square Garden in New York City. And the wokeism is getting more woke. So now the mayor of New York City, Mayor Bill de Blasio, he's joining the wokeness saying, you know what, we've got to stop kids from going into gifted and talented programs because this is a result of white supremacy. Now, he didn't come right out and say that, but this was the task that he was given. The New York Times reported this over the weekend, and they said that de Blasio to phase out NYC gifted and talented program. The mayor unveiled a plan to replace the highly selective program, which has become a glaring symbol of segregation in New York City and for incoming students, and it'll be up to his successor to implement it. Now, his successor has said that he's not planning on doing it. But this is what happened over the weekend. And of course, happy Indigenous Peoples Day, right? Also known to the rest of the normal people as Columbus Day. But this is what's happening in America when wokeism is taking over. When this hate America, hate white people, hate everything that this country was and is, and make it bad. And in effect, that's what it is. Now, people are going to say, Rich, stop drinking the white supremacy Kool-Aid. These people, they got you, man. No. I understand that this is a country that was created by pilgrims, not the Taino Indians. I just understand that to be a fact. I know that's real. The Aztecs and the Incas didn't come into the New World, quote unquote, and create what was created by this, quote unquote, white man. Now, I'm not saying that I owe the white man a debt of gratitude or anything like that. I'm just saying that is our history and I acknowledge it as such. Punto y final. Period. The end. But some people want to take this this angle, this story, this narrative, and take it somewhere where it really doesn't need to be. And this is the problem that we have. So, for example, when I'm scrolling through Instagram, I'm scrolling through Twitter, and I see this one account that I find really, really funny. It's called the Libs of Instagram or the Libs of TikTok. And it has all of these funny, really woke people just saying the silliest of things. And I'm going to get back into that article from the New York Times, but I want to play this for you because this audio is from a young lady on this account. And she's so confident. She's in many ways a clear and concise speaker as she's creating like an Instagram story or a TikTok video. And she's convinced that what she's saying is accurate. And I commend her for believing all of those things. I disagree with her and I reject the fact that what she's saying is true. But I want you to hear what she's saying and think about when was the last time you saw a bunch of young conservative kids taking a stance? This is part of the problem. But listen to this young lady. Check this out.
I mean, I can say it more directly. You weren't gifted, talented, or smart. You were just most likely, statistically speaking, an upper middle class white kid. And so your school district rewarded you by giving you the title of gifted. And then they use that as an excuse to pull resources from your black and indigenous, low income, disabled, neurodivergent peers and gave them to you. You benefited from the system of white supremacy and classism because you could uphold it as more likely than not an upper middle class or middle class white kid. You were the reason and the excuse for withholding resources from marginalized students, and you were complicit in accepting them. And I know you were a child, and I know you probably didn't have a lot of say, and you also didn't have a lot of perspective. But as an adult, if you're still holding on to this idea that you were a gifted kid once, when all that meant is that you could thrive under classism and white supremacy? Unpack that.
So unpack that. Let's unpack everything she said. What did she say? Race and disabled and neurodivergent. Wow, what a mouthful. Now, yeah, she's right. I don't know what half of those words mean because ultimately, look, when I was in the fifth or sixth grade, I was part of a program before I moved to Jersey. I was still in Brooklyn, and I was leaving public school 197, going into intermediate school 240. That's Andreas Huddy on Nostrand Avenue. And I remember I was part of a program. It was a gifted and talented program known as the Eagle Program. And I wasn't taking any money away from any handicapped kids. I was just in a different classroom. Now you're saying, well, Rich, you can't be that dumb. You got to realize that those teachers... No, I don't have to realize that. There are teachers for absolutely everything. There are teachers that are sitting... We saw this, I don't know, 5, 6, 7, 10 years ago, that are sitting in what they call rubber rooms because they're on the payroll. They can't not be paid. They can't be fired. So they're on the payroll. There's a lot of teachers in New York City. And when they talk about teaching shortages, it's only because the teachers that they have... They can't fire and they need more. But if we had people doing the job right, there wouldn't be any shortages. So my point is no, there's no resources being diverted from X, Y, and Z student to another student. And even if it were the case that it was being diverted rather than just budgeted differently, because again, I think you want to have a gifted and talented program and you want to be able to have resources for those kids. And if there's a financial shortfall, that's fine. These shortcomings happen and we got to work them out. But to sit there and say because you're smart, you should be punished, or because you're being punished because you're quote unquote neurodivergent, or because you're black or you're brown, or because you are part of the white supremacy conspiracy to take over every last thing in America, I think is fake and phony and fraud. And the reason why is because we can't literally blame everything that we don't like, that we don't agree with, and that we feel isn't just on racial inequity, right? Or inequality. The words get thrown around so often. We just can't. And I know I'm preaching to the choir here. I'm not going to spend a ton of time on this. I really want to talk about wokeism and how ridiculous it is. But with respect to this particular point, you guys know that I told you I spent close to a decade helping to start a charter school in Jersey City, being on the board of that charter school, being one of the founding members. And in the 8.5, almost 9 years that I was on the school board at the beloved community charter school in Jersey City, New Jersey, we picked, when we filed our application, the neighborhood in Jersey City that had the most challenges based on what educators who were studying socioeconomic situations had come up with as to be big challenges. So they said, the two determinative factors that really decide what's going to happen with a kid, you know, how good is this kid going to do in school, they say are A, how involved are your parents and what are your parents' highest level of education, and B, what is the socioeconomic situation? You know, are both parents in the home? Are you having a situation where there's two incomes? Do you have an income that's adequate and commensurate with everybody else in the neighborhood, right? Those things make a difference. Now, you can blame those things on racism, and people do it all day. But my point is, what we decided to do was say, all right, you know, we're going to put a school here, and we're going to prove that, yes, you can take a kid that's poorer or more poor, whichever is more accurate or most accurate or accurate, you can take a kid from the worst area based on that data and prove that these children can excel. And that's exactly what happened. And the scholars at Beloved Community Charter School, these kids are terrific. They're absolutely terrific. The teachers are terrific. They work for just a little bit less than the teachers in the public school district, and they work harder and better, in my opinion. And we've created a situation where it's not a perfect world, but it's a darn good world. A great place for these kids to learn. So much so that they're in school from 7 in the morning to 6 o'clock at night, some of them, with the aftercare program. So my response when this young lady says, let's unpack that. No, let's unpack the reality that when there's a challenge, you can come up with solutions that change the narrative of your status quo. You can see little black and brown kids succeeding. You can see it. They're not stealing money from the local district, as the local district, the unions will have you think all the time. The money follows the kid. So wherever the kid goes to school, that money goes with him. Nobody's stealing anything. Nobody's taking funds away. But that's the story that they try to teach to keep the money in the power of the union, to keep it in their pocket. And it's wrong. But this is part of the wokeism. And they use these woke lies to get people to do what they want. And they're doing it with everything. Everything is now part of this white supremacy conspiracy. I'm talking about even like transgender individuals. There's a woman by the name of a trans woman, so she's a biological male, by the name of Rose Montoya. Now, Rose is on the same account. I just saw these videos. And I said, I want to play this stuff for you because I think it's important that you realize these are actual thoughts that people are actually thinking and embracing in society today. She's going on a trip. And she gets flagged by TSA. And she's very eloquent in telling her own story. So listen to this. This is from Rose Montoya on TikTok. Check this out.
Can we talk about how horrible it is to travel while being transgender sometimes? I always have immense anxiety leading up to going through security.
So now, I'm not sure if she has anxiety because she's transgender and flying, or because she doesn't like flying, or because she's transgender. I'm not sure. But it gets better.
And this being said, I totally recognize the privilege of having all of my documents correct. So the gender marker on my license, for example, says female. But going through the scanner, there's a male scanner and a female scanner in the TSA checkpoint. And looking at me, you know, I look like a woman and I am a woman, so that's great. I love having cis-assuming privilege when I feel unsafe, such as in an airport.
Just write that down, guys, for your glossary, for your vocabulary words. Cis-assuming privilege. Cis-assuming privilege.
But going through the scanner, I always have an anomaly between my legs that sets off the alarm. And so she asked me if I had anything in my pants, and I told her no. And she's like, well, maybe it's just like the metal on...
Liar, liar, pants on fire.
...your shorts, so let's scan you again. So I did, and then it set it off again. And I was like, look, I'm trans, just pat me down. And her solution was, do you want to be scanned as a man instead? I didn't, but I ended up doing it. And then my boobs set off the scanner, because of course. So I tried to make a joke of it. I was like, oh yeah, there's a lot of plastic in there. It's fine. So then she was like, okay, well, we have to pat you down. And she was like, do you want a man to do it? I said, no, absolutely not.
No, absolutely not. Now, this is what I think is really interesting here, because she's created this whole thing around her. Again, not on the topic of white supremacy just yet, but that's how they build it, right? They'll build it as it's not equal. There's an equity problem. You're not treating me right. I don't have the same as the next person. When how often in life do we have, it's not like it's a third, and a third, right? It's not as if there's, oh, you got men, you got women, you got cis-assuming privileged transgender women like Rose Montoya. I mean, there's so many of these things, infinite genders. How does one know? How does the government, the TSA, even adapt to that, right? They gave an option. You want to be patted down as a man, or do you want to be patted down as a woman? What are we going to do now? Have a third line for non-binary, I identify as other. I mean, I think the whole thing's out of control, and people are doing with everything, whether it's transgenderism, whether it's weight, right? There's another one, this little Goldie. You got to see her. She makes this Instagram video. She's clearly overweight. It's a funny enough video. But what I find interesting is, you know, she says that hospitals are kind of discriminating against her fatness. And I think, and I'm not, listen, I'm a fat guy, so I'm not discriminating against her fatness. I am, and I'm not trying to be insensitive, I'm just trying to be descriptive. The issue here is that hospitals typically embrace good health, typically. So being overweight, being obese, having a higher percentage of body mass index doesn't help you. It's not healthy for you. It's not a good thing, which is why I always wonder when they have all these body positive campaigns and slogans, why are we saying, listen, it's okay to be fat. Just embrace yourself. Embrace your curves. I think we should say, look, no, fat will kill you. Fat will kill you quicker than COVID will kill you. Right? That's why I used to weigh 269 pounds and I had to get down to 218 and I should drop more, but I had to lose that 50 pounds. Because the doctor told me you're right on track for a stroke at 50. And I realized whatever health problems I was experiencing, you know, just being fat, were because of my weight and my diet and et cetera. So I realized this is something that I've got to make a change in. But she's come up with a term, and I don't have her name, but it's from an Instagram account, or excuse me, a TikTok account that goes by the handle FatFabFeminist, at FatFabFeminist. Check this out.
Medical fat phobia is honestly so pervasive. Like, I just went in, I'm getting...
Clinical fat phobia is so pervasive. Let's do that again.
Medical fat phobia is honestly so pervasive. Like, I just went in, I'm getting COVID tests, flu tests, whatever, I'm feeling really bad. And they had to do blood pressure test. You can't really see, but my arm is really red. Because they didn't have a blood pressure cuff that fit my arm. So in turn, first of all, it was painful. And second of all, they couldn't get an accurate read on my blood pressure. And this may just seem like a simple thing, but it's just so pervasive in the medical field. And it really impacts like every visit.
Of course it impacts every visit. When you're overweight, it's going to impact every area of your health, and there isn't a good doctor alive that's going to tell you, listen, you should continue to be overweight. If you see the video, the girl is overweight. And at some point, we have to say, look, this is, like they told me, the guy, you know, I had one doctor once grab me by my belly and shake it and say, hey, you're having a little bit too much rice and beans. And I took it as a joke, ha, 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 right? But when this other guy took a different approach, his bedside manner was just a different way. And he said, look, I'm going to level with you. Based on my, you know, my training and the oath that I took, I'm supposed to put you on all sorts of medicine right now because all your numbers are off the charts on your blood test. But I've seen this before, and it's because you're overweight. He said, if you can drop 30 to 50 pounds, you're going to see a tremendous improvement in your cholesterol and this and that and whatever, whatever. You know, I was 30-something years old, and I was like, damn, that's one three many triple cheeseburgers for me. So I realized, you know what, maybe I shouldn't be doing the midnight white castle run. Okay, granted. So I cut that stuff out, did some keto diet, dropped these 50 pounds, and I've kept the majority of it off of me. So super. But that doesn't mean that there's a pervasive problem inside the medical industry, just like it doesn't mean that gifted and talented it automatically equates to white supremacy. And we've got to stop falling for this narrative because they will use gender, they will use the climate, they will use now one's weight, and they're going to use one's intelligence and your intellect to say that somehow what you're doing is inequitable towards another person, and it's being done in the name of white supremacy. And enough is enough. And if that weren't the case, they're also going to use sexuality. And I'll end with this one. This is a really interesting one, just a minute long clip. But Superman is now bisexual. Check this out.
National Coming Out Day, we learned that John Kent has come out as bisexual. In the newest issue of Superman, Son of Kal-El, John Kent shares a kiss with reporter Jay Nakamura, making him the first Superman to be part of the LGBTQ community.
Listen, I found this funny, but I find it sad at the same time because this is one of those things that's like, wow, when did all this stuff happen? You know, I mean, I stopped watching Superman and collecting comics a long time ago, but there was this piece in Daily Wire, October 11th, headline, Superman now bisexual, don't need another straight white savior, writer says. Quote, I knew replacing Clark with another straight white savior could be a real opportunity missed. So now they're saying the Man of Steel is coming out as bisexual. DC Comics writer Tom Taylor revealed on Monday saying that creating another straight white savior, his words, not mine, would be a real opportunity missed. In the upcoming Superman, Son of Kal-El, the current Superman, John Kent, starts a gay relationship with Jay Nakamura, as you just heard, and they share a kiss in episode number 5. Now, you can read the article on your own time. Interesting piece here by Amanda Presgiacomo from thedailywire.com, October 11th. But my thinking here is, again, how often do you find these gay superheroes? How often? Is it because they made Superman gay and white or straight and white? Is it because he's straight and white that somehow that's wrong? Or is it that, you know, in this white country that we happen to live in that's changing every day by tons, you know, I mean, there's more Hispanics every day. Is it somehow wrong to be white? I mean, this is the part I don't get. Wasn't it white people that came here from England that started the country? So to me, it makes sense. That's the majority of people you're going to find here. You have other groups that are in the minority. You have Hispanics leading the way to become the next majority in the country. I don't see the problem. If we have 3 kids for your every one, then if you don't like that, have more kids. But I just don't get why the attack on El Gringo. Why the attack on the white man? I just don't get it. And I mean, I do get it in that this is how you subvert an entire democracy. And speaking of that stuff, we're going to get to that later. All of this stuff about democracy and the filibuster and what's going on with the jobs report, because I want to talk about all that stuff. But I wanted to just show you that these are the first 3 or 4 videos that I saw on a Twitter feed called The Libs of TikTok and just how ridiculous they are. And this is stuff that's going into the national conversation right now. And to me, it couldn't be more crazy. So what do I say? Move over, Lois Lane. Superman is bi. Keep it locked right there. I am Rich Valdez. This is America.
This is America. This is America.
All right, America, welcome back. We're talking about the jobs numbers, about work. Is Biden putting in that work? I don't know, because this is a really bad jobs report. And you've got a lot of stuff going on, right? So right now, first of all, just a quick look at something. We had a bad jobs report that came out just recently, and he got taken out behind the woodshed by most people. Now, Southwest Airlines is canceling, I think, 1,000 flights or 1,800 flights during this vaccine mandate that they've caused, where you got pilots all over the place saying, you know what, look, I'm not getting it. I don't want it. I've been a pilot. I served in the Air Force. I've done this and I've done that. And thank you, but no thank you. Right, that's what's going on. So you have Southwest saying all that stuff. Now, over 2,000, I'm reading now, Southwest Airlines was forced to ground nearly 2,000 flights over the weekend, blaming the issues on weather and staffing amid speculation that the debacle's tied to the company's recent COVID-19 vaccine mandate. Now, that's how they spun it, right? But then I guess they had to come clean. So fast forward to October 12th, right? Tuesday, October 12th, headline New York Post, Southwest CEO says he's against vaccine mandates and he's blaming Biden. Southwest Airlines CEO Gary Kelly says he's against making his employees take the COVID-19 vaccine, but President Biden has forced his hand with this federal mandate. I've never been in favor of corporations imposing that kind of mandate. I'm not in favor of that, never have been, Kelly said, and he told CNBC's Squawk Box on the Street on Tuesday regarding the COVID-19 vaccine. Kelly said his employees have very strong views on both sides of this issue and blah, 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 but he was forced to do it because of Biden's executive order. The executive order from President Biden mandates that all federal employees and then all federal contractors, which covers all major airlines, have to have this mandate in place by December 8th. We're working through that, Kelly said. So that's where they are, and of course, this is affecting people. Now, he went on to say that if they can't get vaccinated, we're urging them to seek an accommodation either for medical or religious reasons, Kelly said. The objective here, obviously, is to improve health and safety, not only for people working in the airline industry, but so that they don't lose their jobs. So good for them. Good for them, right? This is what they get for playing ball with Biden. I guess you have to because they're over 100 employees, and let's see what really happens. Or they could pay the bill. Who knows? The fine that you get every day, that doesn't seem like a real feasible situation for a business. So, of course, I'm on the other side of this saying, you know what? We shouldn't have this mandate. But it gets worse. They mentioned CNBC. I'm looking at a CNBC article. And here, headline, this is, again, October 12th, 10:39 a.m., a record 4.3 million workers quit their jobs in August, led by food and retail industry. So people in the food and retail industry are quitting their jobs in record numbers. And there's articles on this all over the place. Employment vacancies fell to 10.4 million during the month, a drop of 659,000 from July. Upwardly revised, 11.1 million. Wow. So according to the Department of Labor and their JOLTS report, the decline was short of market expectations of 10.96 million job postings. And these people quitting their jobs hits a new high going back to December of 2000. So if you want to blame Trump, you can't because Trump wasn't around in December of 2000. But I know who was. 4.3 million workers left their jobs in December of 2000. So what does that show you? All right, December of 2000 is the end of the Bush administration. And of course, it was a tough, tough time, right? Right after the whole dot-com bubble thing, the remnants of that continued. And it bounced back, and then the economy got better, and then it got worse again in 08 with the Great Recession. And because economies do go up and down, I get that. And they don't necessarily have to go as up and down as they do, which is what we're seeing with Biden. Clearly, we have the worst gas prices we've had in 7 years. Trump wasn't around 7 years ago, but I know who was, right? Good old Barack. So you see these trends that when you have people, in particular, people that embrace the tax and spend mantra of government, they say, you know what? And Trump was guilty of that too. Like he liked some tax and spend, but he also had tax cuts. So he was spending on military spending, which I think is important, but not going overboard on all these social programs where the government lives your life for you. But that's where we are now. So this is the CNBC piece. Workers left their jobs at a record pace in August with bars and restaurants leading the way. These quits started with a series of high going back to December 2000, blah, blah, blah. I read some of that already. Quits have been historically seen as a level of confidence from workers who feel they are secure in finding employment somewhere else. Though labor dynamics have changed during COVID-19, workers have left their jobs because of health concerns, childcare issues, and other unique pandemic circumstances. So that's where we are. People are losing their jobs left, right, and center and quitting them. Why? Because they feel that they're going to have the ability to get some extended unemployment. Even though that ended in September, I think they could still get regular unemployment. And for many people, it makes more sense. And this is the point that I made before, that you have the government here literally twisting the arm of the big people, the big businesses, you know, the fast food restaurants, the airline industries, all these big employers basically saying, look, people are going to, now you don't have it in the airline industry as much, but in fast food and in retail, they try to pay the least amount possible so they can maximize profit and et cetera. And you have to work within reason. And guess what happens? They're not able to meet the demand because nobody wants to work. And many of them think that they're going to make more money staying at home. But without extended unemployment, it's not going to happen. So eventually these people are going to come back to the workforce, but it's a waiting game. So this is the government literally putting their thumb on the scale, trying to get employers to raise the cost of wages artificially, not because the market's dictating it, but because the government is putting constraints on the market, forcing the market to try and respond to that. And that's wrong. But we've got some audio on this stuff because this is really interesting. You've got Joe Manchin, the senator from West Virginia. He's saying, you know, I'm not going to be voting to raise the debt ceiling. And then you've got a bunch of other Democrats that are just coming at him left and right. You've got people on CNN saying this is the absolute worst we've ever seen. Listen to this.
Okay, it definitely was a complex report. And a lot of that was because of the Delta variant and the reopening of the economy. But that means there's kind of something for everyone here in terms of the positives and the negatives. Now, clearly, the big negative is the fact that the economy added just 194,000 jobs last month. That is less than half of what economists have been anticipating. And as you can see, you know, there was a surge in hiring this summer, but that has clearly faded big time. This was actually the worst job gain of the entire year. And so that means the U.S. economy is still down 5 million jobs during the pandemic. That is, you know, that's disappointing.
Now, is it really because of the pandemic? I don't think so. I think that we have rebounded in many ways from the pandemic. And sure, there are still people that may be out from that. But this is really everything to do with Joe Biden, right? Joe Biden literally walked into office and signed 50 or 60 executive orders, breaking all sorts of records. And the first thing he did, he ended America's energy independence. Now you think, why do you say it like that? And blah, blah. Well, again, because we were able to tap into our own natural gas and were able to produce so much of it that we had enough for here and to export. But instead, he decides to do Russia a favor and say, Russia, we've been holding you up from putting in your own gas pipeline. We're going to allow you to put in a natural gas pipeline. So boom, you got that. Oh, and by the way, the Keystone XL pipeline here in the United States. Oh, by the way, we're shutting that one down. He says he does it in the name of the environment, right? All in the name of the Green New Deal, like all out crazy. AOC, our least favorite congresswoman from the Bronx and Queens, like she likes to talk about all the time, the Green New Deal. Lamentably, this is not how it goes. What ends up happening is you've got people that are buying all sorts of other stuff to make up for the loss in that. Now, you combine that with what quote-unquote negotiations with longshoremen, quote-unquote negotiations with Teamsters, where trucks aren't delivering, where ship and cargo ships are not bringing in the containers, or at least not as quickly, and voila. Now they're holding out for a contract negotiation saying, you know what, we're not going to bring you your goods till Christmas. And all the while, back in Washington, you've got Maxine Waters saying, well, it's that nobody really understands what it's like to be black and brown. And that's why these two senators that are holding out have to vote for this. Meanwhile, the rest of us Americans are saying, excuse me, ma'am, we're trying to afford gas. The last day that Trump was in office, gas was at $1.72 a gallon right by me here in northern New Jersey, right across from Manhattan. $1.72. Today, the cheapest I've seen is $3.11. In New York, it's like $3.57. Crazy. But Maxine Waters is known for saying crazy things. Listen to this.
Congresswoman, I think what the American people cannot accept is one senator who represents a tiny speck of America going against the will of the people. What are your thoughts?
Well, I'm with you, and I think the same way. It is absolutely not to be understood that these two members of the Senate can talk about this being too much. Too much for whom? For people who have been denied, discriminated against, and excluded in every sector of our society, and simply to say that this is too much money and reject particularly housing and child care and climate change and all of this is baffling to me. I don't get it. And even with Sinema, she has not indicated exactly what it is in this bill that's so objectionable to her.
Excuse me, ma'am. How about $3.5 trillion and then everybody lying, saying that it's only a $0 bill, that it's not going to cost anybody anything, but we have to raise the debt ceiling in order to afford it. I mean, the amount of stupidity that I don't understand. It's because you're not paying attention. You're not awake. You don't realize what's going on. But some Democrats know. Listen, right here in Jersey, there's one that's facing, you know, real people. You got Congress people that have constituents. And when the constituents get to them, even Democrats will say, look, this is hurting our constituents. Listen to this.
You know, you were talking about the jobs numbers. Something that no one seems to be talking about, and I didn't hear it from your panel, is how bad those jobs numbers were for women. Yeah. We have seen again and again and again how bad our jobs numbers are for women. And I have heard the same thing that your panelists kind of alluded to from people in my district, employers who can't find employees. Oh, people are being paid to stay home. And I said, well, that ends, right? That ended in September. But let's see, because I have to tell you, I'm a mom of four kids, and the childcare hits that families are facing across this nation are going to make it hard for working parents to get back to work. And, you know, we saw that in the bad April jobs numbers where women didn't make any gains. August, we saw men going back to work 7-1, the rate of women. And my gosh, in these last jobs numbers, women actually lost 26,000 jobs in the market.
Well, I'm going to make one comment. And again, call me what you want. But if we have a trend going upward where women are raising children by themselves for whatever reason, if you have women raising children alone without the support of a husband or other family members, childcare will be an issue. And it always has been an issue. When I was married and raising my children, it was an issue then. And it used to cost us something like $1,000 or $1,200 a month. And that was 15 years ago. So yeah, it's an issue. But guess who didn't pay the bill? The government. I never looked at the taxpayers that surrounded me, my neighbors, to say, you should be paying for my childcare so I can go to work. And this is the point that I'm making. So yeah, if we have a push for women to be independent, independent of marriage, independent of men, independently wealthy, no problem. I don't stand against that. But we can't also at the same time say, well, because, you know, I'm a woman and I'm struggling as a single mom raising my kid, I now need you to take care of my childcare, government, so that I can go earn money, and you need to pay me as much as you pay men or more because I said so, irrespective of my ability and skill. And I'm not presuming that women have less skill and ability. I actually think the opposite. I think women overachieve in many areas and are better than men at a lot of things. But my point is, when you have men that, historically speaking, have not had this challenge because they don't have the same situation, right? When people break up, women end up keeping kids. Why? I don't know if it's because they want to or because that's the way the court system is set up, right? So again, I'm just ranting a little bit here, but I'm trying to draw some serious parallels to some of the things that she's saying to make sense of it. Because if the courts were to say, you know what, no, we're going to split this. Dad gets half the time, mom gets half the time, we're going to split this down the middle. I think you'd see more women working. And you'd see more dads that are out of work looking for childcare, because that's a legitimate concern. But the court system really doesn't allow that. And again, that's just a tangent and something to think about, because women, I think, do leave the workplace to have children, but they eventually make their way back. And I think we rarely look at that when looking at, you know, why there's a disparity and inability to go up the corporate ladder as quickly as others. I'm not saying they have an inability. I'm just saying when people draw the inference that there's an inability. But moving along. And that was Congresswoman Mikey Sherrill from New Jersey, a Democrat, saying that this was the worst jobs report ever, in particular for women. But it gets worse. And they continue to go on. You got Elizabeth Warren that wants to end the filibuster. Even Hillary Clinton now is taking shots at Donald Trump. And that's what they all do, right? It's either blame the virus or blame Trump. Blame the virus or blame Trump. Here's Hillary Clinton. Listen to this.
How close do you think we came to a full constitutional crisis? And how accountable do you think President Trump should be for that?
You know, I think we not only came close to a full constitutional crisis, I think we're still in it.
Yeah. Mm.
And that gives me absolutely no satisfaction in saying this, because I think we're at a very dangerous, continuing, high-level attack on the legitimacy of our government and the election of our president. And obviously, our former president is not only behind it, he incited it, he encouraged it, and he continues to do so. Yeah. And you have leaders of the Republican Party who have willingly gone along as though they're members of a cult, not a political party, but a cult. Uh-huh. And their continuing attacks on the election, their refusal to say, you know what, we've counted these votes, it's over, we're going to move on, has sown so much doubt. And then you combine it with the disinformation network known as Facebook, and you've got a volatile mix. So, yeah, we are still in the midst of a concerted, well-funded effort to undermine American democracy.
Well, Hillary said a lot of things there, and I have to say, I agree with some of the points that she made. I agree that we are still in a constitutional crisis because we never settled the fact that you can't just go and create these mail-in ballots everywhere you want and do it by way of litigation through lawsuits and not through a change in legislation through the legislature, which our constitutional calls for. So yes, our constitution is in crisis. I'm glad they brought that lawsuit again. I'm glad that Stephen Miller and others are bringing lawsuits against the DOJ for other stuff with respect to the attacks on parents and stuff. And that's what we have to do. If they're doing things by way of litigation, we need to fight back by way of litigation and not by calling into talk radio and constantly saying, where are the Republicans? What are the Republicans doing? Where are the lawsuits? If you don't see, you know, it's like saying you're on the subway or you're walking down the street and you see somebody robbing an old lady and you see a bunch of, you know, really fit guys walking by and they go, oh, damn. And, you know, one of them ignores it. The other one walks the other way. And the third one pulls out his phone and starts, you know, recording it to put it on social media later. What do you do? You got to get involved because obviously nobody else is doing it, right? So you do it. And that's the point that I try to bring up always is, look, be the change you want to see in the world. That old Gandhi line, I think that's God's honest truth. We can't sit here and wait for politicians, career politicians that serve multiple terms in Congress. Look, I like McCarthy. I like Lindsey Graham. I think these are all nice people. But I'm not going to wait for those guys that make their living working in Washington to make the change that I want to see. I've got to make my own change. I've got to help change minds my way, right? Whether it's people I talk to, whether people listen to this podcast, whether it's a speech that I'm giving, however it be, that's the angle that I've taken. And we each have to find an angle and each find a lane, because you can see Hillary Clinton is continuing to take shots at Trump. And the reason they take shots at Trump is not only because he's continuing to expose the truth about so many things and he pushes back and changes the narrative, and they hate that about him, but it's also because he's effective and he continues to have these rallies. And you know what? Over the weekend, he had a rally in Iowa. And you know, Iowa is one of those first-in-the-country primaries. And he had a lot to say there. But before he was at the rally, he sat down with Sean Hannity. So we're going to get into that and we're going to delve into the question, will he run? So don't move a muscle. Keep it locked right there. I'm Rich Valdez, at Rich Valdez on all the social media. This is America.
This is America. This is America.
What's up, America? I am Rich Valdez, Valdez with an S. Welcome back. Segment number three, will he run? I'm talking about El Trompito, Donaldus Magnus, the 45th president of these United States, Donald J. Trump, El Presidente. And that is my question. I do believe that he is setting the stage to continue to lead the party. And the Democrats don't like that. They really don't like that. I mean, when we talk about how they hate that, Pramila Jayapal, she says, it's absolutely terrifying that Republicans allow Trump to be the leader of the Republican Party. The problem is Trump is not only the leader of the Republican Party, but it's that the Republican Party was on its way to death anyway, which is why the Democrats were beating us because of their go-along-to-get-along attitude. And I was part of this problem, I have to say, that while I always embraced conservatism, I understood that, you know, sometimes in government, you got to go along to get along. And I worked in government, so I understood. But I realized that there were certain areas where you can't capitulate. And I wasn't in a position ever where I could really make that change. But we saw it happen in Washington time and time again. And these institutionalized problems became pillars of what we see in Washington, pillars of the problem. So that's what we've got. And Trump served 4 years, and he broke up so much of that that he put people on both sides of the aisle on notice in many ways, and they came back with a vengeance to make sure that they could continue their cronyism, they could continue to do what they do with feeding the massive administrative state and using it to their advantage, to their power. Plus, you've got the ever-encroaching Marxism coming in, knocking at everybody's door. So Pramila Jayapal says that the GOP is terrifying for allowing Trump. Check this out.
I was there on January 6th, Alex. I was in the gallery. I was trapped in the gallery as insurrectionists were pounding on the door, trying to find us to kill us.
Too bad they didn't leave her in the gallery.
I was trying to find Mike Pence to kill him and Nancy Pelosi. It's stunning to me that people think that this didn't happen, that it was a setup, that it was a deep fake conspiracy, theory thing. I don't even know how to describe the disconnect between the facts and sort of how people are thinking about it.
I can help you, Pramila Jayapal, madam. Here's how it works. The way the facts and the way people are thinking about it is like this. You got these FBI guys that are super crooked, that are willing to create something out of nothing. So you get a bunch of, you know, older biker dudes, black dudes, Hispanic dudes, Proud Boys, this and that. And again, if you hear the word Proud Boy and you think of something that's automatically pejorative, then that's on you. I don't mean it that way. I'm just saying these different groups. Right. Even the Oath Keepers, which they say that, you know, even the membership of the Oath Keepers is like turned on the leader and the founder, saying he was a whack job. But the rest of us were just here, you know, to really uphold what we thought America was and, you know, nothing incredibly violent and blah, blah, blah. But we are a militia and we do what we got to do if we had to. And my point is, I saw the video. Everybody saw the video. Now, the media shows you video of certain things. And there's things I've disagreed with from the beginning. I'm not here to defend anybody storming into the Capitol, period. I understand it's the people's house. And a big part of me, you know, wants people to do what they want because of I have some strong libertarian leanings. But I realize that even town hall, you know, when there's a town meeting on Tuesdays in town. So you go to the meeting on Tuesday, you show up on Wednesday, you can't just go sit in the gallery there, sit in the auditorium and just because that's not how that works, right? It's the public square. Maybe you could go other places, but it's closed at a certain time. So I understand that and I respect that. I do. So I think if they're having the ceremonial counting of the vote and that's what's happening in the Senate chamber, then okay, do what you got to do, or in the House chamber rather. No problem. Go for it. But some people said, oh, we're going to walk in. Now then they're like, oh, but the cops didn't stop them. Hey, listen, they might have been in on it too, saying, you know, there's too many people. Let's get them this way. Let's keep them away from that. I mean, if you got 1,000 people coming at you, one guy barricaded himself behind the glass and you know, used lethal force to defend himself. Now some people are going to say defend himself against who? A veteran, a female, someone that was unarmed. I saw that shoot, and I hate to relitigate this thing. I don't even know why I brought it up because I never score points with this. But the training that I got in the police academy when I trained in Essex County College Police Academy for Nutley Police Department's Reserve Unit. As a volunteer, I did an abbreviated course. And based on what I learned then, if you barricade yourself in a defensive position and there is a large assemblage of people coming toward you that, you know, by all intent and purpose, you know, if 100 people get a hold of you, you're done. You know, they can stomp you to death. They could sit on you. They could literally rip you to shreds. So it's reasonable to believe that they were coming at you to kill you, especially if you're holding a gun out and you're saying, stay away, or, you know, just showing them the damn gun. People realize guns shoot and kill people. So you should not be trying to climb through a window, trying to climb over what's been barricaded, a section that may be closed off, because you're going to be met with deadly force. And to me, that's a very simple equation. And I hate that it was an Air Force veteran. I hate that it was somebody that believed and loved America that was on the other side of that. But that is how that goes down. And that's why I believe this officer was, you know, whether he was sloppy and leaving his gun in the bathroom and all this stuff, all that may be true. He may not be an exemplary officer. Maybe he's a horrible human being. Maybe he's a wonderful human being. But at the end of the day, I likely would have done the same thing. And I think most cops would have done the same thing because that's what the training teaches you to do. Now, I've had cops call in and say, no, you're wrong. I think that's all emotion. I think most cops realize you're by yourself. It wasn't an assassination. Nobody went out there to hurt that person, right? They were barricaded. They were hiding behind desks and chairs that were piled up against the wall. I saw the video from multiple angles. Anyway, my point is, all of that stuff, I disagree with all of it. We should not be breaking in and you know, disobeying these orders from the police. It's not just the people's house because we say it is. It's the people's house when it's open for the people. But if it's closed for some sort of ceremonial counting or whatever and what have you, I understand. I get it. And again, if that makes me soft on the Constitution, then so be it. Maybe somebody can convince me, but I feel that that's legitimate. And I don't think we should, you want to show up on the steps or wherever they tell you you can go. This is as far as you can go. Super. You don't like it. You disagree with it. You have a conversation. If that doesn't work, you protest it. You have a lawsuit. You go on TV. You make some noise. You bang the pots and pans. You do what you got to do. But you don't go and just say, oh, F you, excuse me, I'm just going to go in anyway. because that's where problems start, and we saw the problems start. But now, I'm not trying to put this on the Patriots that went in, because it was clear that they were led in, right? There were rabble-rousers amongst them, probably FBI for all we know, using, you know, their informants within the Proud Boys, informants within Antifa, that they used time and again. And just like the Gretchen Whitmer situation where they were kidnapping Gretchen Whitmer, it turns out they were only kidnapping her because the FBI guy told them, hey, why don't you kidnap Gretchen Whitmer? When it started out as, we just want to make some noise. So this is my point, that we cannot trust our government because they will do everything they can to be deceptive and to usurp the will of the people to create and concoct what Levin and what Borstein call a pseudo event to make something out of nothing. And that's what we saw. And it cost someone their life. And it's incredibly unfortunate. And I hate that all that happened. But my point is, it wasn't like January 6th was some sort of thing where every last person that supports Donald Trump decided, you know what, we're coming in and we're coming in strong. BS, that didn't happen. What we saw was horrible. It was people led to their slaughter by our government. And that's wrong. So when Pramila Jayapal says it's terrifying that the GOP will allow Trump to be their leader, and she doesn't understand where how people make sense of this, maybe she's not paying attention. But let's finish to listening to the rest of her drivel.
And I blame Donald Trump, of course, but I also blame the Republicans right now in Congress who know much better, who were running for their lives, protected by Capitol Police on January 6th, and yet now refuse to actually say that it happened, or to say to Donald Trump, you cannot be the leader of our party anymore. This is a moment of crisis for our country and our democracy. It is also a moment of real reckoning for the Republican Party. Mm-hmm. Who are they going to be? Just Donald Trump's party, or the party of the big lie, or actually standing up, perhaps for different policy ideals, but ultimately standing up for democracy? And I think that's frankly a terrifying thought to me.
What's terrifying to me is that we allow people to say what they want and to go unchecked. And this is why I do this stuff. This is why they won't come on my show, obviously. I've invited people. I've invited AOC, All Out Crazy, to come on the show. I've invited others. And they don't want to have debate. They don't want to have discussion. They don't even want to have me on MSNBC or CNN. Back in the days, I used to get some invitations on unfriendly media. Now, never. It's because they don't want to have a discussion. And I'm willing to have a discussion, but they're just not willing to have it. Because ultimately, they're not there to have a conversation. They're there to just make a statement. It's, you know, like when they say we're having a press conference, but they don't have any conferencing with the press. They just read a statement and leave, like Biden does. He just turns around, drops the mic, walks away. That's not a press conference. That's a statement, right? There's no back and forth. There's no questions. The media doesn't get to do their job. Whether they're being the fake news or not, they don't even get a chance because that's it. And then when you go back and to Jen Circle Back Psaki, Silent P, of course, and you ask her, hey, well, why didn't he answer any questions? She'll just give you a non-answer and circle back with you, and that's it. Poof, it's over. And this is where we're at. There's no dissent. There's no other side. There's no dialogue. And we can't have that type of thing. So while Pramila Jayapal is saying that she's terrified that Trump and the Republicans allow Trump to take the lead on things, I say he's clearly the de facto leader. Americans believe in what he's got to say and what he brings to the table. And we can't sit here and pretend that we didn't change the way that we voted and used all of these mail-in votes, and we accepted votes that were days late, that were cast after the fact in order to create the leads that Joe Biden got. I mean, these are matters of fact. I'm not saying anything conspiratorial. They did this all in the name of COVID, and it was allowed by the Pennsylvania Supreme Court to happen, even though it was not in line with the Constitution. And there's a lawsuit that's meant to correct that, and I hope it pans out, and I have a feeling it will. I think there was just too many people under too much pressure. It was a perfect storm, just like that Time Magazine article from a while back. Maybe I'll post a link to that again, because that article, to me, it's a long article, but it really sums it up really, really well. And ultimately, we've got El Trumpito, right? So Tinaldus Magnus, he's sitting down with Sean Hannity, answering a bunch of different questions right before the day before the rally in Iowa this weekend. And he says that the GOP needs new leadership. Listen to this.
You did urge the United States senators today not to do what they promised for 2 months they wouldn't do. But yet they threw a lifeline to Chuck Schumer. And by the way, Chuck Schumer, Elizabeth Warren, yep. They're mocking Mitch McConnell. They're making fun of the Republicans, and they're laughing at him because he just threw them a lifeline that they didn't have to throw them.
The Republican Senate needs new leadership. I've been saying it for a long time. Mitch is not the guy. He's not the right guy. He's not doing the job. He gave them a lifeline. It's more than a lifeline. He gave them so much time now to figure out what to do because they were in a real big bind. They wouldn't have been able to do anything. He had the weapon and he was unable to use it. And it's a shame. It's a shame. These 11 people, I know them, some are wonderful and some I don't agree with too often. You know, I'm not surprised to see some of the names, but I will tell you this, that was not a good thing that happened today. He made a big mistake.
America made a big mistake in allowing this to go as far as it did. We have to right this wrong. We have to get out there and make sure that we put in a team, whether we like them or not. Honestly, I'm willing to hold my nose and vote for somebody that I may not necessarily agree with all the time, but to make sure that their vote would be a vote to impeach Joe Biden in 2022. Because clearly in the last 8, 9, 10 months, we have seen this country get progressively worse and worse, and not in the name of coronavirus, but in the name of Joe Biden. Using coronavirus as a ruse, using the economy, using this and that, and destroying everything in his sight, a border that's absolutely out of control. Young girls are getting raped, women and children are being trafficked into the country, and there's no record of them. The United States is literally facilitating the human trafficking of people from Central and South America and Haiti. They're just coming in. I don't blame any of those people. I blame the United States. I blame Joe Biden. I blame Alejandro Mayorkas. I blame, what's her name? Kamala Harris, the vice president of the United States, Kamala Harris, for doing nothing to resolve this problem and saying, oh, we're going to fix the root cause. Oh, you're going to go and create a stellar economy in El Salvador to stop them from leaving? I mean, how stupid can you be? But that's where we are. And Trump is right when he told Hannity, the GOP needs new leadership. But McConnell is an old school entrenched politician, just like everybody around him that talks a good talk. They want the power. They're not willing to walk away and fight the good fight. And that's a lot of people. And that's why we continually have the same problem that we have. It's why we have problems like AOC. And when you have people like AOC, as Trump said, running the country, you know, running Pelosi, bringing those crazy Bernie Sanders, Marxist left-wing ideas to the forefront and then mainstreaming them, getting little kids to jump on board with the climate change craziness, getting everybody and their mothers saying, you know what, no, we need to tax the rich, and making it so that people that are successful are punished and people that are unsuccessful are rewarded. We've got a problem with equity, right? Now we have a real problem with equity. That isn't equitable. That's crooked. But let's listen to what Trump had to say with Hannity. Check this out.
So the $1.2 trillion is about 9%. Think of that. 9%. They talk about infrastructure. This is 9% infrastructure. Should be 100% infrastructure. So that is a total shame. And then the 3.5, which a lot of people are saying is 5 trillion. These are numbers that have never been discussed before with any president. Nobody would do it because it's crippling to the economy. Most of it is money you could throw right out the window. It's going to be devastating. And then inflation has kicked in. And remember this, with energy going up like that, you know, if you have a product and you need trucks or you need whatever it is to deliver it, you need energy. So with energy being double and triple what it was just a few months ago, when we were there, $1.87 a gallon, and now it's over $5 a gallon. That's a lot more than 50%. When energy goes up like that, Sean, everything is affected in terms of inflation. It has a huge inflationary impact on this country. And I was here with Jimmy Carter when Jimmy Carter went out and did what he was doing, and a lot of it was similar, but on a much smaller scale. We had inflation, and it was almost ruining for our country. It almost ruined our country. But this is much more severe. And what they're doing is changing the social fabric of our country. It's not even believable. Bernie Sanders can't believe it. Bernie Sanders goes around telling people, I can't believe what this is, what's happening here. AOC and a very tiny group of people are pushing an agenda that will destroy, literally, it'll ruin our country.
And he's absolutely correct. AOC and the libs and the rest of these crazies that are trying to promote an agenda of equity and inclusion and this and that, or whatever their goal is, redoing the economy, creating a social democracy, creating socialism, creating communism, whatever. All of it is bad for our country because our country doesn't really operate that way. The Industrial Revolution didn't happen because we were a social democracy. The invention of Apple Computer and Dell Computer and all of these great inventions that we've had, the Ford Model T, the automobile, the air conditioner, so many drugs that fight so many diseases, although that's a whole other argument. Some would say we created the disease to create the drug, and I'm not going to argue that. So much advancement in science and technology has come from the United States, and it did not come because of our social programs. It did not come because of extended unemployment. And again, I'm not knocking anybody for being on unemployment. I've been on unemployment myself. I understand what that's like. But the point is, we have to create opportunities so that more people can benefit from the American dream instead of crushing the American dream. Because if we stand for nothing, we will fall for anything. And the only thing necessary to keep evil from taking over is good people like you standing up and being there. And that's a paraphrase from Sir Edmund Burke and Lord Acton. And the other quote, it's a paraphrase from Hamilton. So you know what you got to do. Americans, I think, realize it. And those that don't, will continue to spread this message. So continue to share the show if you liked it. If you got this far and I didn't turn you off and I didn't bore you, please share with your friends. Drop a comment on social media. Follow on social media at Rich Valdez. And of course, feel free to drop a review on one of your podcast platforms, whichever one you like. No problem for me, because people read that stuff and it helps to promote the message of the show. And that's where I'm at. Hasta la próxima. Until the next time, America. I am Rich Valdez. And this is America.
This is America.